And we're going to continue, of course, with our special tribute show to the late Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and we will have special guests and take your calls this hour as well. It was about a year ago when I had an opportunity to chat with Rosemary about what she thinks happens when we die. So let's talk about the other side. What do you think really happens when people have near-death experiences? Because it's one of two things. Either the experience is truly metaphysical and supernatural, or the brain is doing something in that kind of mode. What do you think's going on?
My personal opinion is that it's a combination of both. And since near-death experiences came into the public arena in the 70s and 80s, there has been a lot of attention devoted to the understanding of this kind of phenomenon. And how real is it, or how subjective is it? Certainly, we have to have a physical mechanism for having the experience in the first place. And so scientists have looked at what can we say about the processes that go on in the brain that could explain the types of things that people experience, the lights, sensation of floating, being out of the body, seeing apparitions of the dead, having visions and vistas of otherworldly places. Is it just the brain going through a chemical process when we come close to the state of
dying?
Yeah,
or maybe lack of oxygen or something.
Lack of oxygen, endorphins being released in the brain. Is this just nature's way of making death palatable? And so certainly we have to have the physical mechanism in place to have the experience. But on the other hand, I believe that these experiences are indeed excellent evidence for survival after death, because we have had these kinds of experiences throughout history. They've been documented, and there are many characteristics of common ground that are shared by these experiences, regardless of the period of history and the culture. Some of them do have culture-specific characteristics to them, like certain religious figures that show up. But the overall nature of these experiences is shared by all of humanity. Now, we don't really know how many people in the general population have these experiences, because they have to be reported for us to know about it. But the estimates are that in the United States alone, perhaps a couple hundred thousand people a year are reporting NDEs or similar kinds of experiences involving an out-of-body experience or an OBE. There's a mystical nature to these experiences that brings about profound changes in people. People return from these experiences often significantly different. They have different outlooks, different values. They become convinced of survival. They may even feel different physically, as though they've been rewired. And these also are commonly shared characteristics. So perhaps 10 to 15% of the world's population has had these kinds of experiences, or reported them at least, and even children have them.
Oh, they do. Now, what does science say about them to this point?
Well, some scientists, of course, take a very hard look at this in terms of the physical characteristics, that these are things that can be explained physically, because if you stimulate certain areas of the brain, you can induce similar phenomena. And so this may not be an actual experience of the other side, but just something that happens when the brain undergoes certain changes. And other scientists have examined the evidence and weighed the anecdotal evidence, the subjective side of it, to take a broader view that we're looking at something that has to do with consciousness and not just chemicals in the brain. And, of course, consciousness is non-local. We associate it with the brain because it involves our thoughts and emotions and memories, but it really exists as something separate. Because when people have these experiences, they feel a separation from the physical body that then becomes the personality or the I guess, concept of who a soul is, who am I as a personality, as a soul, continues to exist separated from the body. So what exactly is involved in this process concerning consciousness? And that's something we don't have a great deal of understanding concerning the nature of consciousness, how it operates, what it is able to access. I believe in an afterlife. I believe in alternate realities, interdimensionality, a multiverse, and that our experiences today, and when we share them and talk about them, including the NDE and other kinds of exceptional, extraordinary experiences, we are encouraging the pool of humanity to have these experiences as well.
When we come back in a moment, as we continue our special tribute to the life of Rosemary Ellen Guiley, who passed away several weeks ago at the age of 69, the Haunted Housewives, Teresa and Kathy, join us, and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to our tribute show, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and of course she had a relationship with the Teresa and Kathy Haunted Housewives meeting at a conference, and they all enjoyed the paranormal. Kathy and Teresa, hello you two.
How are you, George? Hi, George?
We're great, and thanks for joining us on this night. Boy, we're going to miss this one, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this has been a tough one. It's been a tough year for us in this field, but this one is especially personal and especially tough.
Well, several months ago, we lost Stanton Friedman, who was a dear friend of ours, and now Rosemary. I mean, enough is enough. I mean, life goes on, of course, but it has been a tough year. It's been a tough year. Tell me a little bit, both of you. Let's start with you, Kathy. When you first met Rosemary, what was it like for you?
Fangirl. for a couple minutes. But it was fascinating because she was a very personable woman, for one thing. So she was willing to just sit down and chat with you very naturally. It wasn't like, you know, you can't talk to me because I'm Rosemary Ellen Guiley. It was more like, I'm glad to meet you. Let's talk. And we started talking about some of her works and some of her books. And, of course, I was really interested in the divination and different, you know, techniques of communication, spiritual communication. And she just opened up and gave her opinion on things. And then we started talking more in depth about books. And I was really interested at that time in scrying. And she gave me some good information. And I actually, she gave me a black mirror to use.
Yep.
For
she loved those her. Black mirrors, didn't she?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do. And so, yeah, so she gave me a good talk on how to use it and how to be successful with it. So it was very fascinating.
She was very approachable, wasn't she?
Yes, she was. Definitely. And she was just a nice, nice lady.
How about you, Teresa? What do you remember the most about Rosemary?
The thing that will always stand out for me about Rosemary is how giving she was to her fans, to people that she met. So we're at this conference, and you were there, George, and Nick Redfern was there, mm-hmm. and Jim Harold was there. There was a ton of people there, and our table was right next to Rosemary's, and people were coming up all weekend, all day, to meet with her and get her autograph and get her books and talk with her. And I remember at one point, Kathy and I went into the auditorium to hear the speaker. And, you know, Rosemary said she was coming, and a woman came up to her and started talking to her. And so she kind of mentioned us, well, I'll be there in a moment, you know. So Kathy and I went in, and we were in there. We listened to the entire presentation, which was probably 45 minutes long. And we came out, and Rosemary was still talking to that same woman.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And she continued to talk to her for several minutes after we came back, and finally the woman left, and Rosemary shook her hand, gave her a big smile, and off she went. And I looked at her and I said, oh, I thought you were coming in to hear the speaker. And she said, oh, I wanted to, but you know, this woman wanted to talk, and I just couldn't leave. I thought it would have been rude to leave. And she just had questions and wanted to talk, and she came all this way to see me. So I just thought that I should stay and talk to her, and she just wanted to keep talking.
I love it.
And I was impressed by that. I mean, it would any one of us, I know Kathy and I would have been, oh, thank you very much. Oh, well, we'll be right back. We have to go. And she just wouldn't do it. She just thought, well, no, I mean, this is what I need to do. She came to see me, and I owe it to her to stay there. And she missed the entire presentation. I know she wanted to see it as one of her friends, but that always stuck out to me. I don't know how many people would have done that for pretty close to an hour with one person.
Well, I'm glad she had an opportunity to touch both your lives. And thank you both, Kathy Weber, Teresa Argy, the Haunted Housewives, who had that close relationship with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. You know, we had a chance to talk to her about Ouija boards in Zozo.
I first heard about Zozo some years ago, just during the course of my usual sleuthing around in the paranormal, and I was researching a lot of Ouija board communications, and I heard about Darren and called him up and talked with him, and found out his story about how he had started using this weird Zozo board and become increasingly obsessed with using it, and that the Ouija board would perform in unusual ways, and this entity began to take more and more of a personality and presence to the point where he really suffered a nervous breakdown. And that led Darren to set up a search around the world to see if other people had the same sort of experience. He kind of, you know, didn't want to believe that he was all alone. And much to his astonishment, he discovered that people all over the world had, independent of each other and without knowing anything about Zozo, had experiences very similar to his. And so over the years, then, he established patterns of behavior, characteristics, even a marked progression, a very predictable progression of how this entity would behave, and usually on spirit boards, although I have encountered Zozo with ghost box devices, and other people have encountered Zozo with automatic writing, and even sitting in seances. In researching this term, and this is a self-named entity. The entity always names itself Zozo. It has some variations like Zaza, Zazo, even just the plain letter Z, some strange ones like Mama and Lily even, seems to be multi-personalityed. The odd thing is that the term Zo and Zozo have dark associations no matter where you look, in mm-hmm. different languages, at different periods in history. It's associated with a real trickster kind of energy and personality. And this really plays out on the board, that people get yanked around and even psychologically harmed. There have been reports of entity sexual assaults, poltergeist effects, manifestations of shadow people, and as Darren described, kind of fog and mist in a room. Sometimes people are just out for a lark, you know, to have fun with the spirit board, start communicating with something that identifies itself as Zozo, and at first they're amused, and then they become kind of entranced, and then this entity really starts taking over.
What does it really want, Rosemary? What does it want?
It seems to want to pester people and torment them more than anything. And I think it takes advantage of people in whatever way it can. It can create violent dreams and nightmares, give people the feeling that they're being watched. The more somebody is upset and begins to deteriorate and disintegrate, the more active and strong this entity seems to become. And in certain cases where it seems to be able to have a sexual advantage, it does that too. It's easy to call it a demon, and that's what people usually think it is, that it's demonic in nature.
But it's not.
And it may very well be, because we did find historical reference to Zozo as a demon in Colin de Plancy's dictionary published in 1818 in a sermon from a saint, Saint Bernardino from the 14th century, 14th and early 15th century, referencing a massive Zozo as common to all demons. So it's got demonic-like traits, but it also has djinn-like traits. It might even be part thought form, because as people experience it, they contribute some fear and anxiety to the situation that then could be played back in kind of a thought form or projection of an archetype. It could be, you know, you'd asked about ancient gods earlier. It could be an ancient god that has kind of fallen into the ranks of demons. But it's got this heavy trickster element to it. And sometimes when people get very deeply entrenched in these Zozo experiences, they have a very hard time getting out of it. And even exorcisms may have to be performed.
This is scary stuff, Rosemary.
Well, it certainly is. And I think plenty of people have gotten themselves into trouble. But at the same time, and you know my position on the Ouija board.
Yeah, we sure do, Rosemary. And of course, she touched the lives of a lot of our coast-to-coast listeners. And let's go to some calls. Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Hey, Frank, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
George, on this occasion, when you spoke of her passing, I pulled to the side of the road. It shocked me more than Stan Friedman, more than our Gary Patterson. She spoke with a confident truth. She taught us how to live and how to die. And she was last on this program on the first week of April. That's when I saw the vision that I wanted. I called in. I saw the vision at 7 o'clock in the evening. I called. I wanted to call, but couldn't get through. She was on this program first week of April, the 3rd or 4th, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she believed in me because I told her about a similar situation a couple of years ago. And I didn't tell anybody about this. I didn't even tell my wife, who was sitting next to me. We had just dropped off her granddaughter, my step-granddaughter, at the martial arts class at exactly 7 p.m. We were running a little late. And what I saw, it only takes me 30 seconds to tell you, I saw what I believe to be a religious apparition. The clouds formed. There was only two clouds in the sky. It formed a face, a beard, a man with a beard, and it was symmetrically perfect, the way the clouds formed.
You saw Jesus.
I'm sorry?
You saw Jesus.
Well, he had a beard, and the blue clouds formed the beard, the white clouds formed the hair. There was a part in the middle. There were no eyes, but there were eye sockets and a nose. And on the left side of the hair, it was the blue clouds formed a woolly sort of texture. And on the right side, it was straight hair. I mean, strange.
Rosemary would have loved that story.
And I was about to tap my wife on the shoulder. I said, no, she's a skeptic. She's not going to believe me. But I verified it with myself because my wife's sitting next to me with her hands on the steering wheel. I looked up again for another 30 seconds or so. I gazed at it, and it rose up further in the sky and then dissipated.
Well, somehow I know, Frank, she's listening to the story right now. If she answers you right now, then that would really be strange, but I'm sure she knows. We're going to come back with more tribute in a moment. And welcome back to our tribute program for Rosemary Ellen Guiley. John Zaffis, paranormal researcher and author, of course, who was specialized in objects that were attached by these entities, had the chance to talk with our Tom Danheiser. We think he
is still trying to come to terms with Rosemary no longer being with us. I always called her my Roro. Very prominent within our field. She will always be remembered. One of the most knowledgeable people that I ever dealt with. And, you know, I was very fortunate and very glad that I had an opportunity to work with Rosemary. And to share a real quick tidbit, had an opportunity to spend some time with her before she headed back to Washington State, where she was born, and spent about a good hour with her. And we just sat and we talked over everything. And one thing that bothered Rosemary more than anything at that point in time was the fact that she could not complete our third book. And it was kind of a sad thing, but I told her at that point I really wasn't too concerned about that. But the one thing I'll be eternally always grateful for is that her husband, Joe, reached out to me to come up to their home and have that opportunity to be able to say goodbye to her.
I have so many memories myself of Rosemary. Where were you lucky enough to meet her? How did you meet Rosemary?
Rosemary and I had met, many years ago at a conference, and I was up speaking, and I was just talking about different things, and Rosemary had gotten up after me, and she was speaking, and she had mentioned me. And I remember I grabbed the two people that were sitting next to me, and I go, I can't believe Rosemary Ellen Guiley is mentioning John Zaffis's name. And from that day forward, we bonded and we stayed together for many, many years, being very good friends.
And, of course, paranormal researcher Paul Davids, of course, had an opportunity to work with Rosemary at the haunted Anchorman Mansion in Los Angeles. Hey, Paul, we lost a special one, my friend.
Oh, we sure did. And, George, you and I were with Rosemary at the Alien Snowfest at the beginning of this year.
Yep.
And I had no hint that she had any illness at that time. Did you?
Yeah, we were told by her husband, Joe, that she was ill. But she was a fighter, looked great. I thought she had a chance to beat this, Paul.
She and Joe came to visit me at the vacation home that my wife and I have at Big Bear Lake at that time. And I had known Rosemary for probably around 15 years. I had met her with Phyllis Galdi, publisher of Fate magazine. The two were at times inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
Since Rosemary had written so much for Fate, and her legacy of writing is absolutely fantastic. She was comfortable with every subject that touched on anything that had to do with spirit or paranormal. Whether it was energy of the light or dark energy, she could penetrate those realms and bring things to you. And that was one of the reasons why I invited her. It was in 2016 to an extraordinary event that took place at the home that Forrest J. Ackerman had lived in for so many years on Glendower in the Los Feliz area of Los Angeles. George, I know you've had me on your show talking about the Life After Death Project.
Yeah.
Which was my film. It was two films, actually, DVD, about all of the strange occurrences after the death of Forrest J. Ackerman that led me to conclude that he was reaching out and bringing proof that life goes on after the passing of the body.
And you and Rosemary, Paul, spent hours in that home, didn't you?
Yes. Well, actually, it was days. Because Mark Rawlings, who is a friend of yours, who owned the what we called the Acker Mansion at that time, kindly permitted me to organize a seance there. But more than a seance, it was a full exploration and investigation to see who might reach out to us if we brought in a team in that house to explore what contact might happen. And Rosemary and Joe came. She was on her way to contact in the desert at that time.
I remember that.
The Joshua Tree Alien Fest. She would go frequently. And so she and Joe came, and also Suzanne Wilson was a psychic who joined us, and Jamie Clark. And what happened there really completely convinced me, boggled my mind, with the ability that Rosemary had to know things and convey things that by normal senses no one would be able to know. For example, one of the experiments I conducted there was this. I had a lot of memorabilia, things that had belonged to the great science fiction editor, Forrest J. Ackerman. And some of these things I had obtained at his estate auction after he died. And I put many of them into sealed containers. I think there were about 8 different sealed containers, and took them into the house and put them in different places in the house. And with Rosemary, I took her around to see if she could tell me what was in these containers. She had no way to know. I was the only one who knew what I had placed there. But to see if the spirit of Fari, who had owned these things, could reach out to her and help her, give her clues. Well, one of the things that really startled me, I had a portrait of Fari that had been painted by Robert Bloch's wife, Elizabeth. You know, remember Robert Bloch? He wrote Psycho.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He wrote the book of Psycho, and then it became the Alfred Hitchcock movie. And his wife, Elizabeth, painted a portrait of Forrest J. Ackerman that was unique in the sense that it was really painted in all browns. It had no other colors. It was such a predominant color in this painting. And in fact, when Rosemary visited me in Big Bear, that the painting was up in that house. It still is. But the point was, she had no way to know that that was what was contained in there. And I filmed this. I filmed the interview with her. She touched one object after another through the container. And she said, it was a painting. And she said it was a portrait of a man. She did not say Fari. And she said the thing about this painting she was feeling was that it was very brown. And
it was.
It was. Yes, it was all painted in brown tones. There was no other color.
She was extremely intuitive, Paul, as you well know. Paul, I want to thank you for participating in our tribute to her. She always spoke highly of you, my friend, always. And, of course, I first met Rosemary back in 1996 on the phone dealing with dreams. When people don't remember their dreams, because you believe, as I do, that everybody dreams, but why don't they remember them?
Some people don't have much natural ability to remember dreams, but for all of us, dreams are in short-term memory. They are not impressed into long-term memory, and unless we do something, unless we take action to impress dreams into long-term memory, like writing them down, putting them on a digital recorder, telling them to someone, they're likely to evaporate very quickly as the brain becomes engaged in waking activities, and they can disappear amazingly fast. So it's important to get information about them down right away if we're going to be able to work with them later.
Rosemary, are you getting any kinds of email responses from people who are generally dreaming that there's something big afoot, that there's some kind of an event that could occur? Are you getting anything like that where you could, you know, say with any reasonable doubt that something could happen here?
I have seen an increase in reports. People are wondering what's going on. This is a groundswell of presentiment that involves dreams and precognitive flashes, intuition, even kind of a foreboding feeling that something major, and when I say foreboding, it's not necessarily negative, but this feeling that something big is about to happen to people on the earth. And, you know, we have global mind more than ever now, thanks to the internet and thanks to our global media and technology. So we can react instantly to the slightest seismic tremor in forces in motion shaping events. And we do sense these things precognitively. Many of our dreams are precognitive about big and little events. So nobody has been able to, you know, put together an exact event, but many people feel that something major is about to happen, and many people feel that it's going to be a kind of a devastating event. So it could be natural disaster, it could be something on the political front that would pitch a whole lot of nations into war. A lot of people are very uneasy right now.
We're with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. We're going to talk about dreams with her tonight. There are some dreams that you would call extraordinary. There are others that you would call ordinary. What's the difference? What makes up those two different categories?
About 75% of our dreams are ordinary, and they deal with our daily stresses and anxieties. These have very common themes to them, like getting lost, not being prepared, being naked in public, having your teeth fall out.
Ouch!
Falling. And they reflect our anxieties. But then we have these other dreams, and they're called big dreams. And they're dreams that take us beyond daily life into more cosmic areas, literally areas of the soul and the life's journey, dreams where we might have direct experience of God, where we have real encounters with the dead and with spiritual beings, with angels, teachers, and masters, where we have solutions to knotty problems that lead to tremendous outflows of creativity, to scientific inventions, to a lot of the things that we enjoy in the world today. They've really come out of dreams. We can have healing in dreams. We can see the future in dreams, past lives. Our dreams really take us beyond the scope of daily life. And that's a very important part of dreaming that often doesn't get enough attention because we're so wrapped up in our daily stresses.
Is there a trigger here that allows people to dream these incredible dreams? Something happened in their life, anything like that?
Many of these dreams occur at turning points in life when people are undergoing tremendous upheaval and change. And sometimes the dreams might even seem nightmarish, but they're actually very healing dreams because they're pointing to significant change. So when people undergo like a serious health crisis or relationship, anything really that turns life upside down, even the realization that they're not interested in their career anymore and they want to make a change, those will often usher in these turning point dreams, these big dreams. And then also when people go through periods in life, midlife, Carl Jung commented many times that when people are on the threshold of middle age and as they go through middle age, this will often trigger a lot of big dreams that cause the person to turn inward, like, how am I doing in life? What have I been doing up to now, and where am I going into the future?
Next month, I'm to be at the Soul Summit in Scottsdale, Arizona, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley, of course, was going to be on our panel. She will be missed. Suzanne Wilson puts on the event. She's a medium, and let's dedicate the event to her. What do you think, Suzanne?
Oh, my God. I'm just glad you're not playing that Rosemary song again, because, man, that got me, too.
I know.
Listen, I'll tell you, I've been an administrator at a top-tier university. I've served on the board of directors for an international institute that presents these conferences on metaphysical topics about survival of consciousness mm-hmm. and afterlife. Rosemary brought, and it's hard for me to say past tense, but Rosemary brought considerable scholarly gravitas to every presentation she made. And we will honor her next month in Scottsdale. I wish I could hear the presentation but that she was going to give. But listen, she gave us terminology that we didn't have before. She gave us conceptual frameworks to understand the paranormal, so we didn't have to be scared unless we enjoyed being scared.
What was so great, Suzanne,
you know,
she had this passion of her job and her business. I mean, she got into it, she did it well, but the passion for it was just superb, wasn't it?
The passion for it drove the scholarly up-leveling that she has brought to afterlife and paranormal research. She coined the term non-human intelligent beings. You're going to hear that, non-human intelligent beings, more than you're going to hear ETs or interdimensionals and things like that. She was preparing us with all of these books and all of these lectures to know that we are living in a transdimensional earth and life as we know it is changing.
Absolutely. Suzanne, we will see you in less than a month. And it would have been great having Rosemary at our side. You know that?
Yeah. Well, we got to kick off our shoes and have sandwiches last time and really have a good time with her. And I'll treasure that memory forever.
You got it. Thank you. Suzanne Wilson, of course, a great medium, but a dear friend of Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Thank you for being part of this special moment for us here at Coast to Coast. She will truly be missed more than I can say. For Michael Cosio, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galanti, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Badal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.